We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
Good morning. I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran Church in South St. Louis, here with
Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Athens, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Darmstadt, Illinois. And Matt, I'm calling an audible here. Just take my volume down quite a tack.
Okay,
because actually I had set him up with you being on the other. Okay, I think that'll be good.
So you're the loud one. Is that what you're saying?
I am the loud one.
We have to adjust accordingly when Jolly John
That's right.
is at the mic.
I have the big mouth. I will admit it. We are going to continue our study of the favorite Bible passages. And what number are we at?
We are at number five.
Number five.
We are chugging right along. And by the way, this is...
Oh, wrestling with the basics. Yeah, we keep forgetting to do that. You know, we know it, but people that are listening to it might not remember from week to week. So we're going to do that. So be ready for that number five. But we're also starting a new series today called...
Yes, that's what I've been saying.
That's right.
We're excited.
New Stuff I Learned.
Good.
New stuff. I'm an old guy, and people say old dogs can't learn new tricks, but I'm going to show that that's false, that it is possible. And now, this is not funny.
But there is virtually an unlimited supply of material here, John. This is good.
That's right. I figured it'll last us for a while. But it isn't actually a humorous feature, and people would argue that the other things we do aren't humorous either.
I'm glad we're being consistent.
That's right. But I just insights come to me, and so here's the one I wanted to share today. Why do you think God had the Israelites kill all the people when they would come into a city in the land of Canaan? That was usually the order, to kill all the people, kill all the animals. And that's a serious question that people do debate and wrestle with. What are your thoughts about that, man?
Well, it's your new insight, not my new insight. Well, Wait a second, no.
You surely have some old insights about that, don't you?
Well, that is something I think people wrestle with. And even as a pastor, you wrestle with that, too, because it's really a harsh command to just kill
it
those that are in the city as they come into that
women
the
and
land
children.
Of God's promise.
Yeah.
I think part of it is certainly we recognize it is pretty harsh. And in some respect, it's God's law at work.
Yeah,
really, kind of in a physical form
good
there. Here are these individuals who, the Canaanites, who really are pagans. They have no regard for the one true God. And if nothing else, it is a word of law for them and for the others in that area, too, as the Israelites come in. And then I think, too, it's sort of a word of gospel in that respect, that the motivation perhaps behind it on behalf of his people, the Israelites, knowing that they're coming into this land, he wants to, out of love, really preserve them. Maybe he knows how sinful they are, how easily led astray they are, and to preserve them so that they are not influenced by these other pagan people as they come to the land and perhaps tempted to intermarry and do different things. And we see in a couple episodes in the Old Testament where they don't do what God commands, and it leads to trouble.
And that's always the approach I've always taken, what you just said there. And like you say, the Bible constantly records when they intermingle with these other cultures, they adopt the other cultures right away.
Yeah.
You know, they start partying, they start worshiping the idols and everything. And so that's always been my answer, that it's God trying to preserve them because he knows how quickly they will fall into idolatry and how quickly they will lose the truth of God's words as a consequence of these other religions.
And I will say, too, God seems to have mercy, though, on some of these people, too.
Oh, he does.
I mean, there's some examples, like Rahab, I think, is a pretty good one there in Jericho, and Rahab the harlot, the prostitute, where God does indeed spare her and her family, and she seems to even believe. in the Lord. So there are these instances where people do seem to repent, and God does spare a handful of them.
And that is crucial to point out, too. It's not like God, if they are willing to accept the Lord, then they will be spared.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, well, anyway, here's the new thought that occurred to me. I wonder if God isn't trying to teach us something about war as a whole, though. Because it occurred to me, we like to think that we can have a clean war, as it were,
mm-hmm.
where we get all our soldiers lined up, and we get all the other soldiers lined up, and we'll have a fight, and may the best man win. But I wonder if in that, God isn't reminding us that's never how war is. War always will involve innocent people. And if you think you can have a good war in that respect, you are absolutely wrong, because war always involves the killing of people, both those who are the enemies and also those who are just innocent bystanders. What made me think about this was a reflection on what happened in World War II. Here's actually the new thing I learned. How did we end World War II, Matt? What was the end, especially in Japan?
Well, Japan and the Pacific, we just had the anniversary of the dropping the bombs.
Yep,
and,
see, that's what got me thinking about Japan. That. Yeah, Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, of course, again, great debate about that. Was that right for Truman to drop a bomb, knowing that it was literally going to destroy every single person in those cities?
Mm-hmm.
Thousands, millions of people were going to die. And I think we've kind of resolved that by saying, well, you know, the Japanese would have fought till the very last man. They had that kind of commitment. Think of the hundreds of thousands of lives that would have been lost if we had to do a land invasion, and
mm-hmm.
so we've excused that. Here's the thing I didn't realize. That was not a new policy. Did you know that, Matt? The idea of just going in and destroying everybody? I think that's what I always understood. That was a new policy we came up with because of the atom bomb.
Mm-hmm.
But that actually was the policy all along in Germany, too. Not at the beginning of the war. Not at the beginning of the war. We tried to do precision bombing. We tried to destroy factories. We tried to destroy military installations. But at the end of World War II in Germany, that was the same thing we were doing. We were sending and we were just totally devastating the entirety of city. We didn't care whether it was a factory. We didn't care whether it was a military installation. We were just going to bomb the cities down to the ground. And that's what struck me. Oh, I didn't realize that. That's how we conducted the war.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, there was a great deal of argument whether that's what we should have been doing. Of course, it really wasn't an issue because we weren't very efficient at it. The atom bomb made us very efficient at doing that kind of thing. But that's when it occurred to me, maybe that's what God is trying to remind us, that if you're going to go to war, this is what's going to happen. And do not think that it will not happen. And again, now in our modern age, we're dealing with this with the whole drone thing. That's come up again. Lots of innocent civilians are being killed in those drone attacks. Now, here's the two final things I want to say, then we'll move on to the favorite Bible passage or whatever comments you have. Number one, I'm not saying we shouldn't have war, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not denying that. We there's evil, there's wickedness out there, and we do have to stand up and we have to fight that. Indeed, the Bible says that that's what we should do. We should take up the sword to fight evil. But I would remind everybody, it also says, he who takes up the sword will perish by the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So let's never think that there can be a good war. No, war will always also bring with it. We have to wrestle with the fact that it maybe brings evil to us, too. Even as we're fighting evil, do we fall into the same kind of evil we're trying to fight against? And the second thing, particularly in World War II, and the bombers who flew those bombs over there and totally devastated those cities, you need to understand those were brave and courageous men. I'm not taking a thing away from their bravery and their courage, because they literally did risk their lives by doing that. And many of them, in fact, probably the majority of them, did lose their lives in doing that. So anyway, just some thoughts I wanted to share with you that I think maybe God did that to remind us this is what war is like. Don't ever think that war isn't. Still have to do it. And I suppose it's also a reminder of what you kind of alluded to at the beginning, that it's what's going to happen to all of us. God's not going to spare a one of us. We're all going to die because we're all sinners. And you know what? We maybe better move on to the favorite Bible passage, because that's kind of a hard place to end with the knowledge that we're all going to die. So I think we maybe need some help from the favorite Bible passage. Any other comments about God having everyone destroyed in the war?
Oh, boy. Yeah, it is a tough one. And I would just keep in mind, too, we want to then kind of take it to the next level, I think, with a spiritual warfare, too, with it's a very real thing. And to recognize that in terms of that warfare between God and evil, between Jesus and Satan himself, that war has been won. That battle's been won at the cross and at the resurrection of the empty tomb. Boy, Satan and death defeated. And then we'll see that final victory then on the last day of Christ's return. So we also keep that in mind, too, that, this is a physical warfare, but there's a very real spiritual warfare, too. And thankfully, that victory has been won, totally won for us.
And again, I don't want to be a bummer about it, but part of that victory in the spiritual war is going to involve you and me and everyone listening to us dying. That's part of that victory, because our sinful flesh can't make it better. You're not going to be able to compromise with it or improve it. It just has to die. The wages of sin is death.
And just recognize that's not what God intended, for us to die or even for there to be war at creation. But because we live in this sinful world, like you said, because that wages of sin is death, and we're going to die, there's death in war, there's death at the cross, all because of that sin.
So now give us something that's more hopeful.
Okay.
I know you like to tease us, so I'm not going to ask you to give it away, but lead us into this number five favorite Bible passage.
Sure. We're counting down our top 10 favorite Bible passages, at least the ones that we've been using at Ascension, and we're at number five. Number five is one that
number five.
Thank you. Number five is one that I expected to perhaps even come in as number one. It's a pretty good one.
It's a good one.
It's a pretty well-known one. So I'll give you some hints.
Okay.
And we'll see if you can guess, or if our listeners can guess, what this is. So it's a verse that's pretty well-known in pop culture. It's quoted in TV and TV shows, movies, probably more than other verses, perhaps more than any other verse.
But now, wait a second. It's not the verse that the guys with the strange wigs hold up at football games, though, is it?
No.
No, okay.
No, it's not that.
Right.
Maybe we'll get to that
one.
We'll
All
see.
Right. All right.
It's
not John 3:16, for those of you that don't
not.
Watch football games.
No, it's
games.
Not John 3:16. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's a whole other story. Yeah. It's on posters, it's on the bottom of cups, it's on the bottom of bags at Forever 21, that store.
It's
all over the
place.
John 3:16.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, more on that in a couple weeks.
Find out why you're hanging out at Forever 21, but go ahead.
Holy cow.
All right. It's a beautiful piece of poetry this week.
Okay. Yep.
It's a passage that's written in the first person as if we're saying the words, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I never thought about that before, but you're right. It is cool.
And it's also a passage that's written by David.
Okay.
So any guesses, listeners? Hopefully you've figured it out.
We know it's a psalm,
right?
Psalm. Okay.
So it is specifically Psalm 23.
Yeah.
Psalm 23.
Kind of hard to keep that one a secret, isn't it?
Yeah, that's got to make the top 10 list. So Psalm 23, and especially we want to focus in on verse 1 of Psalm 23. So if you want to just read verse 1, I suppose, at this point.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
All right, thank you. Good. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Beautiful words. Beautiful words, familiar words, words that, again, are in the, in TVs, movies, words that are spoken at funerals so often. And we say those words, the Lord is my shepherd, in the first person, but can we really say those words with a good conscience?
What do you mean by that?
Especially when we say, perhaps the Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd.
Okay. And by the way, this is that capital L, capital O, capital I.
Yeah. So it's Yahweh. The Lord is my shepherd.
The guy we know on a first name basis in the Old Testament. Yeah.
And is he really? Okay. And I think we can acknowledge, the Lord loves us. He cares for us. We're, he wants us to be a sheep. But really, is he our shepherd? Is he the one that we follow as sheep?
What are you getting at now? Of course he's my shepherd. What are you getting at?
Well, what I'm getting at is, sheep. Sheep, first of all, to be compared to a sheep probably isn't the most flattering thing, okay?
Okay.
If we wanted to be, if you were to ask a kid, what animal would you like to be if you could be any animal? They're probably not going to say, I want to be a sheep. No, they want to be a lion, a tiger, a bear. They want to be a dog, maybe, or something like a porpoise. But not a stinking sheep. Sheep, and I, You know,
in wait a second. Stinking sheep, come on.
You know, in recent...
The sheep people are going to be all over us now,
then we got the kale people versus the sheep people are going to be all over us. You know, I'm researching sheep, and, you know, you always hear about how stupid sheep are, you know, and different things. But I'm researching, and they're apparently not...
The mail
they're,
now.
Well, they're apparently not that... that stupid.
Good.
Not that dumb.
Good. Yeah.
What I've determined is they're not dumb animals. They just do dumb things.
That sounds my life story.
So these sheep are followers, and you know, they have this herd mentality, and that's really their only self-defense is to kind of group together, and they really can't, you know, fend for themselves. If one does something, they'll all go and do it. It's, you know, follow the leader type of thing. There was a story not too long ago about these Turkish shepherds who they just took a break for breakfast. They thought the sheep would be okay for a while. Well, one went over a cliff, and then another and another.
Oh, you're kidding.
They kept going over. 1,500 sheep apparently went over this cliff.
Are you pulling my leg?
But only a little over 400 died because the pile at the bottom of the cliff got so big, they would just kind of bounce off the woolly pile. True story.
You're making this up.
No, I'm not. I am not making things up. I really...
Quit making things up.
It is a true story.
Okay, that's cool. Awesome.
Well, yeah, unless you're the sheep, I guess. But.
Well, the sheep on the bottom,
the sheep on the bottom, anyway... So, yeah, it's okay to be a sheep, and I guess it's even okay to follow people like a sheep, but make sure you're following the right shepherd, okay?
Well, that makes sense.
So that's my point here.
Yes.
Is the Lord really our shepherd? Because I'm thinking we follow a whole lot of other people and a whole lot of other things other than the Lord. You know, just some things that came to my mind is, you know, celebrities nowadays, famous people. I mean, just we take their word as though it's truth and gospel and, you know, just unquestioning, just as enamored with famous people and celebrities and reality TV stars or money. You know, that's another shepherd, something we follow, we put our trust in. You know, the list of things goes on and on and on. But then when we look at those things, money, celebrities, other things, you know, are they really going to, as Psalm 23 says, make us to lie down in green pastures?
Well, sure they will.
Besides still waters.
Give me a little more money. That pasture gets really green. That's the green of money.
Be with us even in the valley of the shadow of death.
Oh, okay. Now you...
I don't know.
Now
I don't
you
know. Lead us in paths of righteousness.
Yeah.
As it goes on.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that either.
Oh.
Now you're making me feel bad about cheating on my income taxes.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'm sorry. I didn't do that, of course.
Of course not.
No.
Yeah, and of course, it goes back to the only shepherd that does those things is the good shepherd. Yeah. The good shepherd. And of course, that good shepherd is Jesus Christ. But again, you know, can we be sure that he really is our shepherd? Can we be so bold as to say the Lord is my shepherd with 100% confidence? Is he really our shepherd? How do you know he's your shepherd?
You know, because he says so.
All right,
he says so.
Good.
Yeah.
So where does he say so?
All over the Bible.
Yeah.
All over the Bible. That's where he says it. In fact, he says, even if I wander away, he's still my shepherd. He's going to come looking for me until he finds me.
No, that beautiful picture, and leaves the 99 and goes after that one. And I think where we see that perhaps specifically for us as individuals is I would go to baptism, that baptism we see that, I am his sheep. He is my shepherd. I am a sheep of his flock. A lamb of his fold. And I think that's such a beautiful picture. You know, where I used to serve over in Waterloo at Emmanuel Lutheran, when there's a baptism, we add that person's name to this banner on the wall, and their name is printed on a sheep.
Is that right?
So it's kind of a cool visible reminder, I think,
that
connection to baptism, that, here it is. A miracle happens. Another person is made a sheep of the good shepherd. And during those times when we might doubt that, we have that reminder, that physical reminder of our baptism, that event where we are sheep of the shepherd.
Wait a second. Isn't there something in that psalm, too, about dining? Isn't there something in the end of the psalm about that, Matt?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, let's see. So, preparing the table before us in the presence of my enemies, You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows.
So I'm thinking not just baptism, but I'm thinking the Lord's Supper would be another reason I could be sure that he's my shepherd, because he does. Well, he leads me to green pastures and still waters, doesn't he?
Yes.
In the not just the Lord's Supper, but also the preaching. And I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
The way in which he feeds us and all those promises as his sheep that we have.
Yeah.
You know, that his body and blood given and shed for us, that we will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. These beautiful promises we have as his baptized, dearly loved sheep. I came across an article real quick about in Nepal. They have Sherpas. So Sherpas are these people that, it's not really just their job, I discovered, but also really their name for many of them. Their name is Sherpa. It's kind of this group of people, almost like a clan or a caste that serve as Sherpas. And what they do is they lead mountain climbers up different peaks, like Mount Everest, for instance. Well, remember we had that earthquake that struck Nepal not so long ago. You know, devastation. There was one guy, I read the story about this 24-year-old Sherpa named Pemba. He was working with a client. They were climbing Mount Everest at the time when this avalanche hit, due to this earthquake.
Talking about bad timing.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So his friends died, these other climbers died, other Sherpas died, and he's decided he's not going to go back this year and serve as a Sherpa. You know, he's had enough. He may never go back. It's understandable, I think. The fear of possible death as you're doing climbing places like Mount Everest. Yeah. But that got me thinking of Jesus, though, the good Sherpa, we could call him, the good shepherd, that even though he knew that death wasn't just a possibility, but death was a certainty, he still climbed Mount Calvary for us, still went to the cross for us, still willingly laid down his life for us, his sheep. And again, in John 10, one of those many places, as you pointed out, where Jesus calls us his sheep, he says that he lays down his life for the sheep. No one takes it from me. I lay it down of my own accord, that he willingly, lovingly lays down his life for the sheep. Which is just amazing.
And I think it makes that passage, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall not fear, for thy rod and thy staff comfort me. That makes it all the more powerful because we actually have a Sherpa who's been there and done that.
Yes.
So it's not like he's wandering around, not sure where to go like we are when we face death. But no, we're following a shepherd who has been there, suffered death, and come back to rise again. So that's a real comfort to know that, we can trust him to lead us even through the valley of the shadow of death. Even if God comes and says everybody should die, the shepherd he sent, they're going to die, but I'm going to lead them to the place where they'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever, not just for a time, but forever. So,
Yeah, and I think when we think of Psalm 23, because of that, we usually think of funerals.
Yes,
I think of Psalm 23. It's often read at funerals.
Yes.
And rightly so, because we have those promises of dwelling in the house of the Lord forever because of that good shepherd, and it really points us to that eternal hope and life that we have. Wait, there's this neat prayer that we pray at Ascension at funerals, and it goes like this. It says, into your hands, O merciful Savior, we commend your servant. Acknowledge, we humbly pray, a sheep of your own fold, a lamb of your own flock, a sinner of your own redeeming. And I think this is this beautiful picture that we commend into the Lord's hands, the sheep of his fold, a sinner of his redeeming. Yeah, beautiful picture.
That is a beautiful prayer, and what a nice thought. So we start out our lives in the water of baptism, becoming his sheep, and then we end our lives with the good shepherd in our deaths as well. So
yeah, all in the hands of our good shepherd, who says that nothing can pluck us out of his hand.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Okay, well, that was Best Love Passage number 5. We'll see you next week as we look at Best Love Passage number 4.